Going Linux, episode 245, Listener Feedback. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill.
Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, listener feedback.
If you want to send us feedback, our email address is goinglinux@gmail.com, and our voicemail line is 1-904-468-7889. Bill, welcome back to another episode.
Thank you.
Oh, man, it's been a little while since we recorded. What's been going on in your Linux world?
I got nothing for you.
It's been boring is what you're saying.
Yeah, I actually, CrunchBang is still running on the machine. I haven't touched it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, well, so it's like a new world record.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess I've been too worried about other stuff to really mess with Linux.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, I've been so busy with keeping everything together, but just like, Yeah. That's probably a good thing CrunchBank's like, hey, I'm still here. Amazing.
Yeah, thank goodness you've got some stability in your life.
Yeah, I got some stability, yeah. And, of course, I'm running CrunchBank, so, you know, when it does go crunch and bang, it stops working, but no.
Is that where the name came from?
Yeah, it's a joke. But no, actually, it's run great and hadn't had any problems with it.
Yeah.
So what you been up to?
Well, I've been recording all kinds of stuff for Computer America and other things, and I've been waiting for Linux Mint 17 final release, and it's still in RC as we record this, release candidate, so I'm still waiting. I'm not going to install it until the final release. It should be very, very soon. So we'll just hang out here a little bit, and maybe by the time we do our next recording, I'll be on Mint 17 and happily using it and finding the little things that it didn't quite get done before release and all those other good things. But I've tried out the release candidate, and it looks really, really nice.
Is it is on LTS?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It is,
and it's, hey, you know, if you run Debian, it's all LTS. Just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I had to. Okay, you know, I got
it's LTS forever until they get around to releasing this.
But it's stable.
Yes.
Well, until I touch it anyway. Stable. So.
Yeah, I think if I ran Debian, I'd be looking to get something a little less stable in my life. I don't need that kind of stability.
Oh, why are you hating on the Debian? Golly.
No, it's good. It's good. Uh-huh. Everything I like is based on it, so.
Uh-huh. Way to backpedal. Okay.
Yeah, there we go. All right. Well, in our show today, Bill, we've got lots of emails, so let's get into it a little bit, shall we?
Sure.
Okay. So our first email is from Jason, who wants to know about upgrades. Larry and Bill, I'm a relatively new convert to Linux, about 6 months or so, and I've been listening to your podcast regularly. I'm running Linux Mint 16, and I'm wondering what is involved in upgrading to a new version. With the release of Mint 17 on the horizon, I'm not sure what is the best way to go about the upgrade process. I'm running a dual boot system with Windows 7, but have my Linux and Windows OSs on separate drives. I have separate root and home partitions and am using symlinks to a third drive for documents, pictures, etc. that is shared with Windows. I have built and rebuilt many systems under Windows over years and am familiar with all of the steps necessary to format and install new versions of Windows, but I'm not sure how to go about this with Linux. I believe I only need to overwrite my root partition and that I can continue to use my home partition with the new install, and that reinstalling the software packages I was using will pick up settings stored in my home partition. Is that true? Also, Is there a way in Linux to do a software inventory so I know what I'll need to install after the new version of Mint is installed? I know the major programs I've added to my system, Chrome, Crossover, etc., but there are more obscure programs like a VPN client and RDP client I installed to use for work that I can't remember the names of. Any advice you could offer would be appreciated. Perhaps this would be a good topic for a future podcast. In any case, I always enjoy the show and find it useful as I continue to learn Linux. Thanks for your consideration, Jason. Well, Bill, this one's not going to be too much of a challenge. I think Jason already has it pretty much under control. What do you think?
Why is he writing us? We need to have... Golly!
Yeah, so... Yeah, maybe a little bit of advice here. First of all, confirming that everything that he said about Linux and being able to overwrite the home partition. Yeah, that is absolutely true. You can go about doing that. You've got your home as a separate partition, which is really the prerequisite for doing the upgrade this way, where the operating system is installed as separate from where your files are installed. And so everything you said is true, right, Bill?
Yeah, but I don't like doing it that way.
Well, maybe we'll get into that after I finish my comment here for Jason. So, yeah, basically to do it this way, as you've described it, you get your copy of Mint 17, you burn it to a CD or put it on a USB stick or however it is you want to do the install. Make sure you've backed up your system first, just in case something goes wrong. And when you install Mint 17, you install it to the original location where Mint 16 was. You don't have to do reformat. You don't have to do anything like that. You just tell it to install the operating system to the partition that was your root partition. You can point the home partition to your existing home partition, but make sure you do not reformat it. There'll be a selection there to reformat or not reformat. You just want to point it there. And this is where the backup comes in, just in case. And so if you do happen to accidentally overwrite it, you just, after the install is finished, you put all the files from your backup into the home partition and everything should work just fine. So since the settings and the preferences for all of your software applications are in your home partition, in your home directory, none of that is wiped away with the new install. All of your shortcuts or your symlinks to your photos and so on will still be there. And so everything should still work for Windows as well as Linux on your dual boot machine. And since Windows is on a separate drive altogether, you shouldn't have any problem with the install at all. So really, that's all there is to it. The second part of your question is some way of identifying what's already installed on your system. Well, you could go through the menu and take screenshots of what's on the menu, but that's really the hard way to do it. We'll have a link to a command that you can use on the command line that gives you a list in a file of all of the applications that you have installed. And it's using the dpkg or dpackage application to create the file. And essentially it goes through your system and lists every application that's installed. And then when you're done with the reinstall, or the upgrade to Mint 17, you can run a similar command, dpackage, with a set option that allows you to take that file and use it to queue up the install of all of those packages on your Mint 17. The disadvantage of doing that is that there may be some applications on Mint 16 that are no longer available on Mint 17. There may be an application or two that's been replaced in Mint 17 with a different application to accomplish the same task. For example, XChat from Mint 16 has been replaced with something called HexChat with an H. HexChat in Mint 17. So by using this, you'll have XChat reinstalled on Mint 17, which isn't bad if you like XChat. And you'll actually have two chat clients, HexChat and XChat, installed. So you can technically go into the text file that was created by a dpackage and remove anything that you don't want installed. Be careful doing that. Make sure you edit it in the right spots and that you don't end up with a typo in the file. Otherwise, it won't install properly. So maybe start with a copy of it and edit that if that's what you're going to do. So, and then once you've done that, all of your programs that you had on Mint 16 will be installed, including the ones that you've installed from third-party places. Except that one word of caution on that is that if you've enabled personal package archives, PPAs, or added any repository sources, you'll need to do that before running the dpackage with the set option to install these. Otherwise, those particular applications won't install. Worst case there, you can go back and rerun the file again, or you can just simply read through the text file and figure out which ones are still missing and then just install each of those manually. So lots of different ways to do that. The quickest and easiest ways to get a list of applications that you've installed on the system is to use the dpackage. I'll just read it out here. dpkg space dash dash get, G-E-T, dash selections, no spaces. So get dash selections, space, and then a greater than symbol, and that's a little arrow pointing to the right, if you will, another space, and then the name of the file. And in the show notes, I'll indicate the file name as selections_file.txt. It can be any file name you want. And that will give you a list of everything that's in your system. So that's the answer to Jason's questions from my perspective. Bill, why is it you don't like doing it this way?
That's too much like work. Back up your system, nuke and pave, reinstall a fresh system because you're going from a Linux Mint 16, which is not an LTS, to a LTS. So there's going to be fundamental changes. Also, I think Linux Mint also incorporates some PPAs in their setups automatically. So you're messing with a bunch of that stuff. So once you've done that, you can use your dpkg dash set whatever and get your text file. And then after you've just done a complete nuke and pave, you have your backup in case it doesn't work. You can always find the files that you want in your backup. You can then just use that to install your programs that you had before. Done. So you don't have to worry about, you know, just moving this, making sure this does, you know, because going from a non-LTS to an LTS is kind of iffy. And even Ubuntu will tell you, which it's based on, will tell you that, you know, yes, you can do version-to-version upgrades. You know, Tom did version upgrades all the way for like 5 or 6 versions before it finally broke it. But they recommend to make a backup, nuke, pave, and keep on going.
Yeah, now one of the new features of Mint 17, I don't know if you've done any reading on this, Bill, but they are basing Mint 17 long-term support on the corresponding Ubuntu long-term support, trusty tar. Mm-hmm. And the next version of Mint will also be based on trusty tar. And the version after that will be based on trusty tar. Hmm. So what they're doing is they're stabilizing the Mint platform by ensuring that the next few releases, the interim releases between long-term support, are based on the most recent long-term support version of Ubuntu. That's not the way they've been doing it. They've been basing each incremental release on whatever the current release of Ubuntu is. But by basing it on the long-term support, they have a stable platform, and they'll make it easier to actually do an upgrade from Mint 17 to whatever the next version is. And I'm not sure the numbering scheme. They've mentioned something about 17.1 and 17.2. So I'm not sure whether the next release of Mint 17 will be 17.1 rather than 18. But whatever their next release is that's not a long-term support release will be based on TrustyTar Ubuntu long-term support. So it'll make it more stable. It'll make it easier to do an in-place upgrade, much like what Ubuntu's been doing, but maybe even more stable than that.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So that's my take on it. I like the nuke and pave.
All right.
I do it enough.
Yeah, well, you're usually doing a nuke and pave to a whole new distribution, so well, that makes sense.
Yeah, well, yeah, you didn't tell me to qualify.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, our next email comes from Curtis, and he asks about Linux on an older laptop. He writes, Larry and Bill, I have an older Dell D610 laptop with a 4.3 screen format, which I prefer. It has a single core 2 GHz processor and 2 GB of RAM and a 7200 RPM IDE drive. I hope to be able to keep using for a few more years and was wondering if a Linux distro would allow me to do that, as the recent upgrade from Windows XP to Windows Vista really slowed my little computer down. If you think Linux is a good option, what distro would you recommend? Thanks in advance for your help, Curtis.
What do you think, Bill?
Get off Vista!
Well, okay. Yeah. This is an older computer, and yeah. XP to Vista slowed the computer down. That's not surprising, given that he's only got a 2 GHz processor.
Yeah, even the Vista was never known to be a supercharged performer. You'd see better results going to, like, Windows 7, which is a little lighter. But if he wants to go the Linux route, I would say that's not too terribly low a system. I'd say he could run Linux Mint on that, or Ubuntu, or what's that? What's the other one that has for low resources? The Lubuntu.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's got several different options.
He does, and using Linux on it could definitely extend the life of this computer well beyond what any version of Windows would do. And Lubuntu, that's the LXDE-based version of Ubuntu, is probably your best bet if you want something slim and light and modern-looking and performs well.
Fast.
But you're right, Bill. I think that even the Mate version, Mate version, or the Cinnamon version of Linux Mint would work quite well on it. Of course, given that Mint 17 is about to be released, you might want to wait until that before you install it, if you're going to go the Mint route. But if you go with Lubuntu, it is currently in long-term support, and that will give you support until 2019, I think it is. So yeah, I would, if you need to do it right now, I would go Lubuntu and just use that right out of the box. Install it right over what you've got. If you've got any important data on there that you want to save, make a backup of the data. And then when you're finished the Lubuntu install, put that data back into the home directory of your Lubuntu installation, and you're up and running, and you'll be able to continue to use that machine through 2019 if you choose to, with full support of security updates and application updates
and video drivers and all that.
Yeah, exactly. So lots of good life left in that old Dell.
Yeah, well, actually, that's not that old. I mean, 2 GHz processor. I mean, it's a couple versions back. I mean, what we're running i7s with 4 cores, you know, so what's that? That's fairly recent, so that's not that old. 2 GHz is still pretty hefty. So, and 2 GB of RAM is not super low. He didn't say how if he's been a Linux user before, but if he wanted to get a little more, you want to try something a little more exotic, I always say you can try a Crunchbang, but if you don't, you haven't done a lot, I'd stay with the Ubuntu derivatives like Linux Mint, Lubuntu. Yeah.
I want to say that I have a 3-year-old computer that I've been using for the podcast for quite some time. It is currently running Mint 16. I'm using the Cinnamon version. And its maximum CPU speed is 2.2 gigahertz. Or 2.27, I guess, technically. And typically, it's running at 1.2 gigahertz. And it's got, you know, one of those adjustable speed CPUs, so it automatically adjusts if I need it to run faster. Yeah.
Most of them have that now.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, 2 gigahertz isn't bad. And for the past 3 years, at least, I've been using a 2 gigahertz machine to record the show. And I've been upgrading Mint with the Cinnamon version for about that long as well. So, Mint, just regular old Mint, or maybe even regular old Ubuntu would install just fine on that machine.
Well, I installed, just to give an idea how well Ubuntu and Mint scale, I installed the last long-term support release on a friend's old Lenovo that had just a regular old Pentium and 1 gigahertz, and it runs good. Mm-hmm. It runs really well for, you know, and it's not a super speed demon or by no means, but it runs faster than the XP. She was incredibly happy with it. Yeah. You can get another 3-4 years out of that thing if you use Linux.
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay. Our next email is from Kevin, who commented on KeePass X, which we mentioned in a previous show. He writes, just a comment on your listener feedback show. I heard you suggest KeePass X on a thumb drive, which I have, but I also have several computers, including a Windows desktop. And what I do is to put the database for KeePass X on Dropbox and just point my client to it. That way I have one database of passwords and any changes get automatically shared to all of my machines. Regards, Kevin.
Clever.
Yeah, that works really well. In fact, when I was using KeePass X before I switched over to LastPass, that's exactly what I did. Well, not exactly, because I wasn't using Dropbox. I was using Ubuntu One. But Ubuntu One is gone. So
I'm sorry, I had to laugh.
Yeah, if I were still using KeePass X, it would be on Dropbox.
But
and it works really well. I never found any conflicts with two systems trying to use the same database simultaneously, because I was rarely logged into more than one machine at a time, and so there were never any conflicts or contention for the file. And I ran it that way for quite a number of years, and it worked well. And yep. I was using cross-platform Linux and Windows as well, so works great.
Yep. All right, Gus provides us a suggestion about Grub. In your last listener feedback episode, you had a user ask about Grub issues with Arch. I've had trouble with that in the past, and while there is a certain amount of satisfaction that comes from installing vanilla Arch, I suggest that he try one of a few projects. Manjaro is what I use, and it gives me a little more stability than the stock Arch because they have their own repositories that wait a bit longer to give you the new packages than Arch. This feature limits the amount of breakage that can come from stock Arch updates. Manjaro comes with many different desktops to choose from and can even choose to install a system with no GUI from the live CD. This allows you to build a custom system with no pre-installed software. If the user wants the stock Arch repositories, I would suggest Antergos or Evolution, which are similar projects that both allow the user to choose from a variety of desktops inside of the graphical installer. These projects also allow for a base install with no GUI. These both will quickly get you into a bare Arch install for you to install on top of. The only difference between these two is Antergos has one repository of its own and Evolution just has the default Arch repositories. I would suggest that anyone interested in Arch check these out because these make building an Arch install much easier. Gus. Thanks, Gus.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Anything to help make Arch installs easier is good in our books.
yeah.
Okay, our last email is from Nils, who suggests chapters. Hello, Larry and Bill. I was wondering if you've ever thought about adding chapters to your audio files. I saw that you already make lists with timestamps in the show notes. The setup from there to something like simple chapters doesn't look that big. The format for the chapters is just an XML file. There are more and more podcasts that use them, especially in German, and I'm loving it. I love to listen to your podcast and would love to have chapters supported. Keep up the good show. Best regards, Nils. P.S. English is not my first language, so please excuse any fault words, sentences. Have you heard of this software before, Bill?
I haven't.
Yeah, I did a little digging into it. And we'll have a link in the show notes. It's from something called Podlove. And this is a plugin for WordPress is what they originally developed. And of course, we don't use WordPress in our system, so we can't use their application. But they have written out the specification for chapters. And it's something that goes into the RSS feed. So I will do a little bit more research into it and think about including chapters. It'll be a little more work for me to include those in the RSS feed, but it's simple enough. I think I can adapt the timestamps to minimize the work involved. So in the future, we might actually have these chapters. Now, my question is, and without any experience with this, which audio players support these chapters?
Yeah.
Most of our listeners are listening on iOS devices or Android devices. And if most of the players for those devices actually support this version of chaptering, that'll work just fine. So as of this listener feedback episode, 246 will include chapters. And what I'm interested in hearing from our listeners, either on Google Plus or send us an email or send us an audio feedback, let us know if chapters is working for you. I know that the folks over at podlove.org have a player that they have for websites, and I'm assuming that it will work on mobile devices as well. And it certainly supports their chapter versioning, but I don't know whether other popular players support it as well. So beginning in episode 246, listen for and look for those chapters and let me know if it's working for you. Thanks.
And don't worry about your English. Your English is better than mine, and I live in the United States, so keep up the good work. Just ask Larry, I can murder anything.
Well, that's it for email for this time, Bill.
All right.
You seen Linux in the wild? I know when you were in the hospital, you were saying that you you saw Linux on some of the machines there.
Yes, I did.
Anything and else since then?
Actually, I did see an older machine ATM, and it had, of course, went back to its base install screen, and it was OS2 Warp.
Ooh, that's an oldie.
Yeah, I thought that was OS 2 Warp version 3. It wasn't even Warp version 4. So I was like, wow, that's old.
Yeah, I hope that machine doesn't have any access to the internet.
It does.
Oh, no.
But, you know, I have actually some of the newer machines, you know, with the new touchscreens and stuff for running Windows. They're Windows-based.
Yes.
Of course,
generally, I think.
Yeah. Well, no, the new ones are, I think, they're embedded. They're
okay.
Yeah, they're so not quite as much, but still. Ooh, how do you patch something like that? Yeah.
Well, there's a patch every Tuesday, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to push it to their ATM network. That's why my ATM never works. Okay.
That's why home banking from your Linux browser is bad.
Yeah, well.
Except getting cash from your Linux machine is a little.
Well, it's kind of hard to get cash out of your own computer. If I could figure that out, I'd never leave the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know. Yeah. But they still like you to produce that green stuff when you go to the grocery store and stuff like that, so.
Yeah, well, unless you're outside the United States, and then it doesn't have to be green, right?
Okay, it could be multiple colors, and you know, ours have multiple colors now. It's just
yeah, it's still basically green.
It's green. Yeah. Oh, come on now, you know, you're making us feel inferior here.
No, I like green.
Yeah, we all do. But I tell you one thing. I wish we'd go to the colors that I like to have in the Euro. There's some pretty colors. I mean, you got red and blue, and you know, there's no way to mess it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just give me the blue one.
Right. Well, and the U.S. currency is printed on paper that's made from fabric, and it makes it nice and stable and sturdy, and it's traditionally been done that for decades.
Yeah. So it's a special linen.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, in Canada, and I'm sure in other countries as well, they've gone to a polymer-based, so a plastic-based currency that is easier to embed security into.
Uh-huh.
And it's almost indestructible. You can carry it around in your wallet, for example, for a long, long time before it begins to break down. The only disadvantage is don't put it in the dryer.
Ah.
It makes it through the washer just fine. Just don't put it in the dryer. You get a glob of very expensive plastic.
Oh, that would really suck.
Yes. Yes.
I just cashed my paycheck, too. Oh.
So, disadvantages with every approach to currency.
Yeah.
I think we should just go Bitcoin and be done with it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Maybe not.
As long as you let me run the Bitcoin service, probably shouldn't let me do that. Okay.
Anyway, that's it for our episode today, unless you have anything else, Bill?
I do. I do have something
else. Okay, good.
It's not really linked. I just updated my amateur radio license, and I used my Linux machine to do it, and they said it couldn't be done, but it worked perfectly, so...
Nice.
But of course, Google Chrome, it didn't. I used Google Chrome on both of them and installed it. Everything went through just fine. People were telling me that you couldn't do it because it would throw up errors, but it worked perfectly for me. So, yeah, I am now a ham in more ways than one for another 10 years. So, yay. Yeah, that was kind of happy.
Yeah.
So I heard that some of these government sites didn't work well. So it did. It worked fine.
So they're just kind of hedging their bets, I guess.
Yeah, I guess they're hedging their bets. A couple years back, there was problems that if you didn't use a certain browser or a certain operating system, you'd have problems. I guess they've got around that these days.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, Russ, K5TUX, and Pete, VE2XPL, over at the Linux in the Ham Shack podcast. I don't know whether this is news to you, but I'm sure you can use some of that in your show if you listen to ours, and I think you do. Give a shout out to these guys with your call sign, Bill.
Well, my call sign is WB4BBC or Whiskey Bravo 4 Bravo Bravo Charlie. So, yeah. My original one was Kilo Echo 4 Oscar Oscar X-Ray. So is KE400X. I never liked that one that much, but so when they introduced Vanity, I went ahead and grabbed one that I liked that sounded good with Morse.
Okay. And for me, it's November Oscar Charlie Alpha Lima Lima.
What? You're not a ham.
Right. Write that out. It says no call.
You do realize that you can become a ham now with no code, Larry. We can get you set up.
That's all right.
Uh-huh. I'm sure Russ would be more than happy to help you.
Yeah, I'm sure he would.
Yeah.
That's okay. We've got one ham on the show.
But anyway, enough geeking out about ham.
Yeah. So I guess that means it's time to wrap up. Okay, so our next episode will be Computer America, number 74. Until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and to subscribe. We are the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
You can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast, Google Plus community.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.